Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Lee Cantor here with Junko Horvath, another episode of Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour. And this is brought to you by our good friends at Fujiyama Wealth Management. Welcome, Junko.
Thank you.
It seems like it's just been a few weeks we've seen you. How are things been?
Great. It's nice that it's not raining today.
I know. Thanks for making that happen.
Yeah.
Now, who do you have with you today?
Yeah, I have a wonderful guest today, Randy Kessler, founder of KS Family Law and Stasona, and Steve Carson, partner of KS Family Law. Thank you for coming.
And we're going to kick it off with Randy.
Yeah, Randy first.
Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thanks. Great to be here, guys.
Yeah, so I know that you are, high wealth divorce case with a lot of athletes and celebrities.
Yeah, we are. It's funny. We're known a lot for representing celebrities and high-profile people because they're in the news a lot. Yeah. But really, it's not that big a percentage of our practice. It's probably bigger than most firms. It's probably 20, maybe 25% of our practice. But our bread and butter really are the people that, come to us and say, I'm not one of your celebrities. I'm not one of your high-profile clients, but I've got some wealth, and I want to make sure I protect it, or I want to make sure I have time with my kids. So 90% of what we do, or 75% of what we do, is really for people that you have never heard of, and they don't want to be heard of, and they don't ever get heard of, and they're not in the press or the media. And it's sort of flattering to me that they feel like they're lucky to have us as their lawyers, because we are grateful as can be to have clients that want us to handle the most important parts of their lives.
Yeah, that's interesting. How did you get into the family law?
Boy, when I was 3 years old, my grandfather, who used to drive cabs at the Miami airport overnight shifts, looked at me and said, you're going to be a lawyer, not a shyster, but a lawyer. And so I never forgot that.
I wonder why. I wonder what he picked up.
I don't know. He was the son of an immigrant, and maybe that's what you thought of as success back then. You're going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an Indian chief, right? But then when I got out of law school, I had clerked with firms, and they did litigation, and I was doing mostly family law for the firms I worked with, and it seemed to be something I was good at. Mm-hmm. Started my own practice when I was 29 years old, and I took everything that came in the door like a young lawyer does.
Yeah.
And the people that were coming to me to say, hey, you're young, will you handle my traffic court case? That was great.
Yeah.
But the people that came to me for family law seemed to say, I've heard you're good at this. Can you help me with this? It's really important. And that was flattering to me. It made me feel good. And so I just made a decision that I was going to only do that. And 30 years ago, when that happened, most lawyers didn't want to say they were a divorce lawyer. That was dirty.
Really?
Yeah, because it sounds like you're profiting off someone else's misery. But if you think about it, every lawyer, every doctor, everybody that solves problems is only making money because people have problems. So I got over that real fast and said, I'm going to be a divorce lawyer, and I'm going to own it, and I'm going to be proud of it. And I'm very insecure, and I didn't want to have my own firm and have someone pay me a lot of money to handle their business and be unsure if I was doing it right. So I immediately started hiring people. And it created a dilemma because I had a lot of staff, and so I needed to have more business. And it went back and forth. And I don't know how it grew from there, Junko, but I just love doing family law. I feel rewarded. The case is over. Nobody gives me a high five, but I see them 2 years later, and they come up to me, and it's a nice embrace, and I was there with them when. And it's just, there's nothing like that when you help somebody through a hard time. It's a good feeling. So I've loved doing it.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have repeat business as people get divorced again and again?
Yeah, unfortunately we do. You can joke, free prenup after the third divorce. But we do, and children, child support and child custody and parenting time issues seem to last, obviously, at least until children get out of high school. So we see them a lot. But truthfully, most people, when we're finished with their case, they want to go on and they don't want to deal with the divorce stuff anymore. Right. And if we button it up nicely and do a good job, they don't have to come back to us. If we solve their situation, like, what happens if my child wants to spend more time with dad? Well, the agreement that Kessler and Solomiani put together for you says, upon 30 days' notice, you can have this extra week here or this extra week there. So we try to fine-tune every settlement agreement to the specific facts of that family.
Interesting. So what kind of problems most of the people have, like about the one spouse moving to?
Sure. How long is the show?
Short.
Well, short. Yeah. Okay. Most people have problems that are either parenting time related or money related.
I see.
I don't think that the real problems that people have are general. They're usually, excuse me, one second.
Yeah.
Thank you for that glass of water.
Great.
I think the problem that people have when they come to us is the other side, and they don't get along. You know, every now and then somebody comes in and says, me and my spouse have agreed, here's how we want to divide the house, the cars, everything else, and it works out fine. Most of the time, and this is going to sound really strange, the biggest problem is that they don't both want the divorce. Mm. They may not want to admit it, but somebody is ready to get divorced, and they're ready to say, you can have half, you can have 75%, I just want out, either because I want to be happier or because I've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or I just don't want to be in this situation anymore.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But until both sides treat it like a business transaction, both sides recognize there's going to be a divorce, there's not a lot you can do, because if I'm divorcing you and you don't want a divorce, I could offer you every penny I have. And if you say no, then I can't get divorced until the judge says so. So that's the biggest problem, is helping move them both towards the idea that you can be divorced and still have a life, and there is a future after divorce. That's probably the biggest hardship.
I see. Interesting.
Now, is family law, it's broader than just divorce, right? There's other activities there, right?
Well, yes. I mean, anything relating to families, children, and support, because obviously people get married and have children, and that's a divorce if they get separated. But there are people that don't get married, but they still have children, and they still have issues. So we have a lot of that. We have people that have children outside of marriage, and they need to guarantee their time with the children or support for their children. And then after divorce, of course, there are two types of issues, which is consist of enforcement. Someone doesn't pay their support or doesn't permit visitation. That's called contempt. Or the other type is modification. Things have changed. Somebody goes off the deep end or becomes addicted to drugs, and they're not the best custodial parent anymore. We go back. And what's interesting, in most cases outside of family law, once you go to court, that's it forever. I sue you for the car wreck and you pay me $10,000. I can't go back and increase that. You get one shot at it. Family law, it's a concept in the law called res judicata. Once it's decided, it's decided. In family law, that doesn't happen because things change. You can't say the children's lives will always be perfect if they're with mom, because mom may turn out to be bad 5 years from now and dad may improve, or vice versa. So we have a lot of post-divorce issues.
Now, when you started the firm and you were kind of gravitated to family law, what was the path to the first celebrity client? Like, how did that even get into your radar?
Boy, I've thought about that 100 times, and I've been asked it probably 1,000 times, and it's a great question. I think originally there were a lot of women that had children with athletes that weren't getting paid, and nobody wanted to take their cases because they couldn't pay the lawyer to go after the guy for the money. And I felt bad for them, and so there were a couple cases I took, and it took a long time. Some took 10 years.
10 years?
Well, there's one that we settled. We got a judgment 15 years ago for $186,000, and we just collected the pension last week. I mean, it just, you know, so I didn't make the money. And that sort of evolved to then one day, some of the hip-hop guys and some of the athletes started coming in to meet with me, and I'd say, so do you want to file a lawsuit? Are you in trouble? They say, no, but I heard if I meet with you, Mr. Kessler, that she can never hire you.
So it's preemptive.
Preemptive. So there's a conflict now. So that's how we sort of started, and there were a couple cases that got some media attention. We were representing Bishop Weeks against Juanita Bynum. There was a big case, and there was a criminal case going on, so he couldn't talk to the media, and he really, you know, needed his side out. So we would work on how to respond to the allegations in the press, and I learned a lot about that through that case, and we worked with Ed Garland as his criminal defense lawyer, and he's the icon of criminal defense lawyers in Atlanta.
What are the athlete celebrities that you can disclose?
Ones that I can talk about?
Yeah.
You know, we've had cases against Evander Holyfield. We've had a jury trial against him. We've had cases against Michael Jordan. Steve and I just finished representing Dominique Wilkins, and that was briefly in the news, although there was no real drama with that. He's just a nice man, and had, you know, we had to get through that. So other ones that, you know, I don't want to disclose anything that wasn't public, but I know the Ludacris case and the Usher case were out there in the news a little bit. So we've had our share. That's probably, you know, the tip of the iceberg. But the fun thing is to get a call from somebody and know that no one's ever going to know and that I'm never going to say anything. And those folks, I see them at Hawks games or you see them somewhere and you just wink and you sort of know them. You know? They're basketball players. Steve and I go and we sit on the court a lot at the Hawks games, and they're players we've represented that, you know, you just see them during the game. They'll wink at us, but they don't want to come over, and we don't want to.
Exactly.
Come over, right?
Yeah, that's right.
There's no high-fiving.
That's right. You don't want people saying, oh, that's why you know.
So now, when you're working with these people, and sometimes you really empathize, and they're good people and everything, but sometimes it's the opposite, right? How do you kind of manage the emotions of this?
So there are two ways to, you know, when you get the client that, like, let's take the stereotypical jerk of a father who says, I just want to scare her about custody, and I want to get custody. And there are two ways that lawyers handle this. And some lawyers say, I'm just not going to represent them. And there's some that are, some people that we just won't represent, obviously. They're people that, you know, it just, I don't want to be associated or affiliated with them. But some people like that, you know, I have an ego, and I think maybe I can fix them, or maybe I can fix the situation, or maybe I can help. And you know what? Maybe they're right. Maybe I misjudge them. So, you know, I try to dissect it and digest it, and I figure out, how can we figure out what should be best for the kids? Because I don't represent the children. I represent the guy who hired me. But what we do is we get some experts. We'll get psychologists involved. We'll get a guardian ad litem involved. And they will chip in and chime in, and they'll do some research and investigation. And they'll give us a recommendation. And usually it will say, this is why the mother should have custody if I represent the dad. And if that's the case, then I can at least explain to the father, look, we can go to court, but this person sort of did an investigation, and the chips are stacked against you. Or sometimes they might say, your client should have custody, and then we've got some weaponry to deal with to negotiate with the other side. But I'd like to try to figure out, before we get to court, what we think should happen, and try to have a real honest sit down with my client and say, here's what we think the judge will do. Whether you think it's fair or not, you can probably get the same deal without going to court. But if you really want to try it and you know, roll the dice, here are your possibilities, here are the odds, and here's what it's going to cost, and let them make the informed decision.
Now, over the years of dealing with divorce and so many different families, you've kind of, are you now an expert in the do's and don'ts of how to manage a marriage and how to negotiate a divorce?
Hey, my wife's not coming on the show.
She's going to be next.
Oh, no.
Get the real story.
Well, she's the best. She does everything right, and I do it all wrong. No, but I'll tell you, and Steve Kirsten's probably a better person to talk about this because he's got some good cliches, and I talked to him all about this. You know, we go.
That's
home,
called wisdom. It's not cliches.
But they're cliches that stick for a reason, right?
Right.
You know, like the one that, you know, why is divorce so expensive? Well, because it's worth it. That you know, there's something to be said for what you get from a divorce aside from money and time with your children. You get closure and you get to move on. I'm not an expert in marriage. I like to joke that I dated my wife for a long time. We didn't get married till we were in our early 40s. So I skipped my first wife, my first marriage, or my first wife. You know, we see a lot of people in their 40s and 50s that are on their second or third spouse. I'm on my first spouse, but mainly because I didn't have a spouse when I was 20 or 30.
But does being around all this, does that make you more cynical? Like, how do you?
No, I recognize things, but I'm a human being, and I, you know, we all have to bite the apple, and I make my own mistakes, and I, you know, have probably done things that I regret. Nothing terrible that's arrestable, but you know, I've probably, you know, made a condescending remark when I shouldn't have, and I think back, gosh, my client did that. I'd lecture my client on it, so.
Right.
But it does help you appreciate it. And there's not a day that goes by that me or anybody in our office that's married doesn't say to ourselves, man, and I thought I had, you know, issues, or I thought that my marriage could be a little better. And you look at the people that come in and we say, thank goodness for, you know, our issues. It's sort of like my grandmother used to tell me, you put your dirty laundry up on the laundry line and you see everyone else's, you take yours right back down.
Yeah.
Now, what about the dating as a divorce lawyer? What was that like?
That was interesting. You know, what's funny is we dated for so long, and she was the one that was, you know, patient. And I wanted to get married. Everyone thought she didn't want to marry me because I was a divorce lawyer, or that I was afraid of marriage. It, you know, everyone's got their own story and their own issues, but it was interesting. You know, I heard people say, oh, you're not getting married because you're a divorce lawyer. And I said, no, I'm not getting married because right now it's just not right for us. So
now tell us about the book.
The book, yeah, Divorce, the book. Protect Yourself, Your Kids, and Your Future at divorceprotect.com. So, when I started practicing law, after a few years, I realized I get asked the same questions over and over. Should I move out of the house? How much does a lawsuit cost? Is it a jury or a judge? And I said, there's so many answers I'm giving all the time. Why don't I write a book about it? And I worked on it, and I worked for 5 years, and I could never get it good enough because every time I thought it was ready to be published, I'd look at it and say, somebody could say, Kessler, in your book you said this, but you're in trial saying something else. So I was worried about being contradicted. I was worried that it wasn't generic enough. Put it aside. 15 years later, I represented a woman who had written 100 books and was on the Today Show about books. And I said, you know, I started on a book, and she asked me about it, and she motivated me, and I spent another 5 years. And it was before blogs existed, really. But it's really in blog form. There's just probably 100 or 200 paragraphs. You know, what is mediation? What is a deposition? Just to give you a little basics on the family law routine of divorce. And then the ABA loved it. I was chair of the ABA family law section, and they heard I wrote this book. And usually they reach out to lawyers and say, will you write a book on this? But they saw that I'd already written it, and they liked it, and they said, can we use it as our own? And we negotiated, and so we did, and they did an updated, different version. But it's still called Divorce Protect, and so the ABA sells it. It's on Amazon. It's on divorceprotect.com. There are lawyers across the country that I've spoken with at seminars that tell me, you know what, I buy your book, I buy 100 of them, and every time a client comes in, I just give it to them and say, read this first. It'll give you a basic overview. And then, of course, there are lawyers that say, why are you giving away all that free information? You could charge people to talk to them about it. I say, trust me, people are going to read a paragraph. They're still going to have questions.
Right.
It at least gives them a little bit of peace of mind. It's for that person who's obsessing about what is the process going to look like? Can I get through it? To at least understand the terminology. And I feel really good about it. And thank you for letting me talk about it for a minute.
And that's been out for a while?
Yeah, it's been out probably 6 or 7 years, the original version, and 5 or 6 years, the ABA version.
That's great.
It is a good
book. Yeah, and it's good that it's like the frequently asked questions, right?
Exactly.
These are the questions that people are, and then they don't have to, it's easier for you probably just read the book and then we'll talk.
That's it. And look, if someone wants to pay me $650 an hour to tell them the same thing, I'll do it.
Hey, whatever works. It's like the audiobook version of the book.
Right, for $9 on Amazon, for $650 an hour in my office.
Yeah. I have one question. So you also are founder of Starsona. What is Starsona?
Thank you for letting me talk about that. So to tie it into my practice, you said at the beginning that we represent a lot of athletes and celebrities, which we do. And I'd walk to court with them, and they'd always stop and say, this fan wants to take a picture with me. I got to stop. And I'd say, hurry up. We got to see the judge. But they're always so nice. And, you know, even the former athletes that don't have a lot of money, they're still nice to their fans, but they don't monetize this. And I also get a lot of calls from people that say, you represented NeNe Leakes of the Real Housewives. You represented somebody. Can you get that famous person to do a video for my kid? And I try to do it, and it's awkward. And I just thought, like that saying, you know, there should be an app for that. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, my sister-in-law was a chief marketing officer for LegalZoom, and I was at her wedding in Silicon Valley, and she said, Randy, will you help me do a divorce app? Because LegalZoom, we need to do it a little better and state-specific. So I started helping her with that, and I learned about apps and websites and how entrepreneurship works in Silicon Valley. They know how to do stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Junko, you've been involved in that. And so I dropped the idea on them one day. I said, I call it the Happy Birthday app. There should be an app where anybody who wants to give a gift to their kid could just find a star online and say, hey, for $20 or $50 or $100, whatever the star wants to charge, can I have you say happy birthday or good luck in the soccer game or congratulations on being valedictorian? They loved it. We started it. We launched it February 4th, Super Bowl Sunday. We've now got 200 stars. And today is actually the first day that the website is fully functional, that stars can fulfill requests on the website at starsona.com, and fans can request it or the Starsona apps on Google Play and on the App Store, of course.
And the way that it works is if you're a consumer out there, you go to the website or the app, and you scroll down, pick your favorite celebrity. Can you search by celebrity? I'm sure
you can search 100
different categories. And then they pick the celebrity, and then there's choices of activities that the celebrity is willing to do.
That's exactly right. So you go to starsona.com or the app, and you search for a celebrity. You can search by football or by team or anything that's in their bio or by hip-hop or, you know, or by name. Dawn Robinson from En Vogue is on there. You know, T-Boz is on there. Ryan Cameron.
Right.
You know, Dominique Wilkins. And you find your favorite star. You University of Georgia. Who do you have from there? Well, we've got Champ Bailey and Rennie Curran. And, you know, and then you choose them. And it offers you, what would you like to do? Would you like a shout-out, like a video? Or would you want to have them announce a birthday party? Or do you want to ask them a question? You film yourself saying, hey, Josh Powell, what was it like to play with Kobe Bryant? And then your picture's on it, and he gets the request, and he fulfills it. He sends you a video back that says, it was great playing with Kobe Bryant. He was the man, you know, whatever he says. And thanks for asking the question, Johnny, and I hope you have a happy birthday, by the way. Thanks for being a Lakers fan, whatever it is. You can be the greatest dad in the world by giving your kid something like that.
Like instead a personalized message from their favorite star.
It's the new celebrity autograph, right? Instead of signing a football and you're not really sure if they signed it, you know this was the real person, the real deal.
You have it on your phone.
And a lot of the stars raise money for their charities and their foundations this way, and they raise awareness. And not only that, you get a link that you can share on your social media. You can show everybody how cool you are by putting on your Facebook or Instagram and saying, check out this video that this, you know, that Dominic Wilkins did for me.
Now, is one of the choices sometimes the person will, like, go on their own social media, on their Instagram, and share this as well, or that's different?
First of all, when you do this, the stars, as long as you want them to, and most people do, are authorized to share this on their social media, and they don't have to, but of course they will, because the average star is a star because they're big on social media, and they need social media following. So what better for a star to tweet out? I'll give you two choices. One, a star could tweet out and say, hey, did you see the sunrise today? It was beautiful. You know, they tweet stuff like that. Or, hey, check out this video that I did for little Johnny's birthday. It was great to make Johnny happy and fulfill his request. And then they share that, and all of a sudden, they look cooler. They look better. It's a good thing for them to share. And it's more, you know, relevant to the audience. I think people like to know the personal touch between stars and people. So, absolutely, stars can do that.
So if the star that you want is not there, so how
you just call Randy and he'll call him.
Absolutely. You know, reach out to me. And if you know a star that wants to be on, you can give him my information. You know, randy@starsona.com or rkessler@ksfamilylaw.com. But absolutely, we're getting more stars every day. And, of course, when stars hear about it, it's sort of the locker room conversation. You know, they're talking about it. You know, I was talking to one NBA star and I said, hey, you know, he goes, should I do this? I said, well, Paul George and Kyle Lowry, two NBA All-Stars, are on. He said, okay, I'm in. You know, that's really, the more they hear about it, the more they want to be in and do it.
Cool.
And it's a great way for them to support their charities in a way that's kind of pretty painless.
100%. It's free internet real estate. Even if they never get a request, their profile's out there and it shows their foundation. It makes people curious. Oh, I didn't know he was involved. I didn't know Dominic Wilkins was involved with the Diabetes Association.
Right.
So it's a good thing for stars, good thing for charities, good thing for fans. It's really, it's, you know, the brighter side of what I do, considering divorce is sometimes so hard and so difficult. I'm happy that this is another small way to make people happy.
All right. So I see you brought with you one of your colleagues at your firm.
Oh, this guy is a superstar. I'm so glad he used to beat my brains in court all the time. So we were lucky enough to get him back on our side. So I'm so glad to have him.
That was contractually required for you to say that.
So welcome to the show, Steve Kirsten with KS Family Law.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And can I find you on Star Sunny yet, or what's your status there?
My style is a little more low profile.
A little low profile.
Yeah.
I'm on KS Family Law.
You're there. They can find you there.
He's a partner. And thank you, Steve, for coming.
Thank you, Jenko.
Yeah, great. And I know that you are appointment lawyer before, and then you came to my industry, financial service, and then advisor. Then went back to law, but now family law.
I'm not sure if it's been a long, strange trip or just a long and winding road. I've been a lawyer since 1992, and my first law career, as I call it, I was an employment lawyer with a terrific firm, and we had really exciting clients. And yet somehow there was something that really wasn't satisfying for me, and I wanted to try something different. And I'd had an interest in financial services, and I changed careers. I left the law. Mm-hmm. I had my Series 7. I was with a major Wall Street brokerage. Mm-hmm. I was a financial advisor. What I really found there, other than loving the subject matter, was I loved working with individuals on a subject matter of just personal importance to them. It translated to, here's my life. Help me manage my life in a better, smarter way. Generally, that being the financial piece of their life. And through that opportunity, I had a client who was a partner at what is now an opposing firm. And his firm needed to grow, and he knew that I was a lawyer, and I had a great opportunity to continue working with individuals, very often looking through their financial lives and helping them manage that part of their life through the challenge of a divorce.
I see. So then Randy grabbed him.
Oh, well, Steve can tell you the story, but I wanted Steve to work with us because he was such a nice guy to be around. And let me tell you, when you go through stuff like this, the hard stuff, you got to have somebody you can turn to that you respect, that you like, that you can laugh with. Mm-hmm. And gosh, does he make me laugh. But his version of it is probably much more entertaining than mine.
I first met Randy about a month into my time in family law, mm-hmm. which is going on 16 years ago, and I was so new into family law that I didn't even know who Randy Kessler was. That's yeah. how new I was. And just, you know, meeting him, and he said, "Hi, where'd you go to law school?" I said, "Tulane." And he said, "Oh, I grew up in New Orleans." And that's really been the start of our friendship from there. Mm-hmm. And then it's going on 5 years ago now. You know, I'd known Randy the whole time, and our managing partner, Marvin Solmiani, as well. And just a conversation led to a coffee, led to a dinner, led to mm-hmm. Just a terrific opportunity to come down and join Randy's firm and the guys at my previous firm, which was we still respect them. I talked to one of those partners this morning. Mm-hmm. They couldn't have been more gracious about it, and they're off in opposing counsel now. Mm-hmm. But we're in an environment where it's just a younger, better fit for me. Mm-hmm. And working with Randy has opened up opportunities like this mm-hmm. To meet you. And we really complement each other. I come in with the financial background. And, you know, what's interesting with all the talk, as Randy pointed out, we get some notoriety for high-profile clients. Mm-hmm. But the highest net worth cases that I've worked on in family law, none of them have been people that I ever would have heard of or read about in the media. Mm-hmm. Cases where it's billions, not millions sometimes, in the total family wealth that's being protected on one side and maybe someone's looking to take a slice out on the other. And as Randy said, these are people that they don't want it in the media, mm-hmm. and that's got to be part of our skill and our people expertise. And that's very often the goal. Folks can come in and say that they want someone really aggressive to represent them in court, mm-hmm. and that's a skill that we'll bring to court. I, within the past week, have gone to court, and in a custody case, that child's no longer living with the mother, and it's not the first time that's happened. I don't do that lightly, but when that's the right thing, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when mom is really being a mama bear and protecting a child and there's something to protect her from, we'll do that too. We also, this is all we do, and we have to bring the perspective to people to know that sometimes court is not the right environment for them, and there can be something very destructive about going through that process, and if you've got children together, you're always going to have a tie to them, even if you're not living in the same house, not living in the same state. And so if we can find a way to get to a resolution that is, if it's not perfect, it's something that they can both agree, yes, this is what is generally in the best interest, and let's do it and not tear each other apart. Maybe they'll be able to deal with each other better in the future, even on something as simple as 20 years later when one of these children get married and they've got to stand next to each other mm-hmm. in a picture.
That's true.
Now, how has the financial background impacted your law career?
Oh, very much. Ever since I've come back, what we do as family law attorneys very often is we're reading through financial service statements. We're reading through brokerage statements. And other than I can pat myself on the back and say, I know how to read these statements.
So now you're the guy in the office. They're like, oh, just give it to Steve. Like, he has to read all that?
Pretty much. very often. And sometimes what's really interesting is I forget that I've got some level of expertise and education that all family law attorneys don't have.
Right.
And so when we're dividing up retirement plans, there are certain IRS regulations on how to do that, and I've got that knowledge. Other times, for example, I mentioned that I was with a major Wall Street brokerage firm here in Atlanta in the local office. Independent financial advisors may be set up a different way. Sometimes people really don't understand what they have or how much they have. They can be fantastic doctors or successful business owners, and they know that. And then in terms of their financial business, they know, yes, I made money. I sent it to my advisor, you know, Mr. Smith, and he's taking good care of it. But sometimes when I get in from my client a list of what they own and here's how much I'm worth, I'll take a look through and realize they haven't understood how to read these statements, and they might have double counted. Oh, well, I have this statement here for $1 million. I have this statement here for $3 million. So I have $4 million. They don't know that that first statement
was a subset of the other one.
Was one of the line items on the other statement. Right. And once in a while, I'm the one to break it to them that, no, sir, actually, this is how much you're worth, not that's how much you're worth.
That's interesting. That's an unintended consequence of your background.
Well, what's important is for people to know what they have.
Right.
Know what's at stake and make informed decisions. Randy and I had a debate one time about how much would it be worth to you if you could buy one more day of living, and that would be, you would spend anything for that. And I said, well, maybe you would spend $1 million for that if you had $100 million. But if what you had was $1 million and a family, would you really spend it on that?
Right.
Or now all of a sudden do you say, I want that $1 million
to go to my family. Right.
And so people have to make measured decisions.
Yeah. So you guys have these philosophical conversations periodically?
All the time.
Very interesting.
Not everybody has a Junko in their office to run the stuff by, so I'm lucky enough to have Steve for the my shortcut.
Yeah, because lawyers don't have many times the financial, backgrounds. So
right.
It's very difficult for them to how to divide, so they call us and then we give advice, by the value of the day or the number of the shares, So those things are not familiar.
Right, and it's amazing that these people are super successful, but they can't properly read their own financial statements that they're getting.
Why didn't Prince have a will, right?
Right.
He didn't want to go see lawyers. He didn't care.
I think Aretha Franklin, the same, like these mega celebrities that have all this wealth, and they know, like in Aretha Franklin's case, she knew she was dying. It wasn't out of the blue, where Prince more was maybe out of the blue and thought he wasn't dying, but... When they're in those situations, is that something that is it? They're obviously making a choice to do that, right? It's not that they're ignorant.
Let me ask you this: how do you feel about going to see lawyers?
Right.
You should go see a lawyer today and make sure your will and your estate and all is ready to go. And I'm your friend, and I'm telling you, you're Aretha Franklin. You're worth a lot of money. You should go do that today. And like most people, her response probably was, "It's not my top of the list," you know.
Right, but the ramification of not doing it. It's ridiculous, right?
But that's why we have careers. I mean, there somewhere in your life, there's something that you haven't taken care of. Same thing for Junko. Same thing for me. I'm not going to mention it on air just in case my wife is listening.
she thought you
no,
went.
I'll say what it is. I don't happen to own a burial plot. Mm-hmm. I do, however, have plenty of insurance so that I know if I haven't gotten around to that when the time comes, she'll be able to afford it. I also am in my mid-50s. I recently got long-term care insurance. Mm. A lot of these things that I pick up aren't even from being in financial services, and I'm sure it's the same for Randy. We come into this career with our own life experience, and what do we experience through our parents or grandparents or our siblings? All of our clients are going through a tough time, whether it's a modification because they got divorced when times were good and then we had a great recession, or if they were just simply in a different life place and then their career got back on track and now they're ready to say, I am ready to step up and be able to do something different. We're really guiding them through a process. And, my mother was she's retired now, but she was a special ed teacher, and she once told me that she felt blessed that her children were good students in school, and so she went and worked with people who didn't have the opportunity to have those same skills. And I'm married 26 years. I didn't skip my first marriage. this is my first marriage, and we still live in the first house we ever bought together. And, I go home every day very thankful of who I get to go home to. Your question earlier with Randy, no, I'm not an expert on what makes a marriage work. I'm pretty darn good on what makes it not work and on what not to do.
Okay, what are some things not to do?
Let's make it a more positive. Here are five things that could put us out of business, and these are highly technical. It's please, thank you, gentlemen, put the seat down. Roses are $16.99 for 24 at Costco. Don't leave it just for Valentine's Day or your anniversary. And try clearing the table once in a while. Nothing that I just said was high tech, but often it's the little things. Folks come in, and when they're telling us what their stories are and what they want to tell in court or tell to the mediator, you know, I can take a step backwards while I'm listening and think to myself, how is this going to play in court to a judge who's hearing it all for the first time? Is it going to amount to something? But to the person who's telling it, it was a real major deal what that person,
right,
at a time of stress muttered under their breath and never thought about it again. But somebody else heard it, and now it's being put up in front of a judge 10 years later, and someone's having to answer for why they vented a little steam. That's what our job is. Our job is taking them through the process with everything they bring to us and just put some order back in their life.
Now, it's primarily divorce-oriented, but it, like we were talking about wills and trusts and things like that. Is some of your work that as well? Like, you have these clients and they say, hey, this is my financial situation. Should I get a will, trust? Do you help in that area as well?
We don't draft the documents, but we do have a broad network of friends who do that. And one thing that I think I'm the only one in the firm who does this, I am a member of the estate planning section of the bar. And Randy and I have both attended the Fiduciary Institute for the State Bar. And it's important for us to spot those issues and realize where there's a hole in what the person's doing and be able to tell them, here's an issue, here's who you're going to go talk to, and have a specialist advise you on that. One area where we overlap with folks like that is a prenuptial agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I draft a lot of prenuptial agreements. And so do some estate planning attorneys, and I've, you know, had discussions with them about that. And that's an area where we can, in advance, say, let's take care of issues so that if things don't work out, you know you're not going to have an ugly fight later. And then I tell them the best way to handle this is think of it as an insurance policy. If something goes wrong, you're going to be taken care of. But none of us want to have to file a claim on that auto policy that we've got or the homeowner's policy that we've got. So do it right, and then put it in a very safe place, put it away, and go live your life and be nice to each other.
Now, do you any advice for people that, like, who should have a prenuptial agreement and what are kind of some of the parameters around that?
That's really changed generationally. Traditionally, well, the prenuptial agreements first really became recognized under law. It's about 35, 36 years ago in this state as being permitted under the law. Historically, they were saying, oh, no, this is a contract that's going to promote divorce, and we don't want to do that. And gradually, they came to see the wisdom that it was protecting legal rights. And historically, they were put in by people typically on second marriages where people had perhaps grown children and a legacy.
And they some scar tissue.
And some scar tissue. And they were making sure that perhaps the second wife or later spouse wasn't going to be taking the legacy from the children.
Right.
It also protected somebody from knowing, is this person interested in me or my wealth? And sometimes you'd have one spouse with money and one with absolutely no money. Sometimes they each had their own legacies that they were protecting. What we're finding with the younger generation is folks who really don't have much to protect at all are coming in for prenups based on things that they don't have yet. They want to protect their future intellectual property. They've got some startup that might be worth absolutely nothing right now, but they've got plans and hopes and dreams, and they want to protect that. And we've started to get people coming in looking for prenuptial agreements in that vein, and I've done some.
Interesting.
See that? You learn something new every episode,
yeah,
Junko.
The new generation, they are like, you know, think differently.
Now, are the younger people getting married more or less? Like, what are some of the stats around marriage and divorce for younger people?
I'm going to defer to Randy a little bit, but I think that there's it's certainly getting married later, and that probably statistically adds up to less because you have people who are skipping their first marriage.
But you know, there are young people that are creating wealth earlier. You know, when I was growing up, the way you became successful, doctor, lawyer, accountant, financial advisor, radio personality, whatever it is, and now it's, I want to be the CEO of what? Of my own company. I want to have an app. I want to have a website. I want to have, you know, so, and a lot of them sound far-fetched, but guess what? There's some of these people that make a lot of money. I mean, we all want to be Mark Zuckerberg, right? If he came into my office 20 years ago and said, I need a prenup because I got this thing I created called the Facebook, I would have laughed at him. you know, but they want to protect that kind of law. So you can protect ideas and intellectual property. Yeah. So youth sometimes do need prenups.
Interesting.
Good stuff. So now, again, let me make sure we get all your websites out there. The website for the law firm is?
KSFamilyLaw.com, KS like King Solomon, Family Law, or AtlantaDivorceLawyer.com.
Oh, that's a good URL.
It's easy.
Well played.
Thank you.
And again, the name of the app for Stars?
StarSona, like Persona, but StarSona. StarSona.com. And I just want to say also, if there are any young lawyers listening, get involved because, you know, stuff like this, giving back, you know, I wrote the book to give back. You know, we teach at Emory Law School and we're all active in the bar. That's really how we sort of built our business unintentionally. We, you know, lecture at seminars and help teach young lawyers. And turns out people say, ugh, I don't want to do family law. If I ever have a family law case, I'll just send it to you. But thanks for trying to help me through my own or my family members.
We hear that every day. Thank you for doing it. I want no part of it.
Yep.
But this is just the way we're wired.
Mm-hmm.
It's to educate
and share the information.
Yep. You know, it's not what the information is. It's how you use it.
Right. Mm. All right. Well, thank you both for being part
of the
show today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Interesting and informative.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Junko, thank you. Thank you for all the work you do for your clients and for ours.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Junko Horvath. This has been Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour, brought to you by Fujiyama Wealth Management. We will see you all next time.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Registered representative, securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member, FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Fujiyama Wealth Management and Cambridge are not affiliated.